Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the call. We'd like to give a special recognition to any of those new VIP coaching clients that are joining us tonight who have made a commitment to spend both in personal coaching and being with us here on Tuesday nights and then spending a weekend with Ramon and me at the cabin, a whole year of taking on their lives. Very excited to have you join us tonight. Welcome. We also welcome our special guest, Lynette. You have several friends here from a company called X-Fuse who are joining us for this evening. We'd like to welcome all of you. And this is an interactive call. We'd ask everyone to go on mute, *6. I don't mute the whole group. If you've got a question as we're going through the discussion, just press *6 and say, Dave, 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 and then you're able to participate in the call. So if you'd like to participate, just everybody press 6 to come off of mute. You'll know that I know you're off because I'll acknowledge you calling out my name, Dave, Dave, Dave. So welcome, everyone, our new VIP coaching clients, our new group coaching clients, the guests this evening, Lynette's guests. We want to welcome you all. This is a very interesting time of year. I made a comment last night in a meeting to a group of consultants who are working on a program that we're building with the Augmandino Group. It's called the New Life Academy, as in today I begin a new life. Very exciting opportunity to assist those who are struggling with this addiction, which impacts 7 out of 10 Americans. I say addiction. It's really a disease. 7 out of 10 Americans are impacted at some level by abusive alcohol. And to be able to assist them in taking on their lives and do so in an affordable manner, it's wonderful to have Augmandino and his principals involved in this particular area. And we were sitting here in a meeting last evening, and I asked the question. I said, how many of you, given the opportunity to move Christmas to sometime in June or July of this year, would vote affirmative? I was just curious. You know that everybody in the room raised their hand? Every single person. Now, I sensed that kind of energy, that something's happening this Christmas, this holiday season, that we haven't experienced in quite some time as a nation. Last Christmas was a little traumatic, but some still had money left on their credit cards and little home equity lines, and, you know, some of those things hadn't totally been shut down. You know, September, October, November was bad, but we were hoping that the spring would get better, and then we've just had an entire year just chisel away at most people. And here we are, December of 2009, and here we are in December of
2000. Could move Christmas to June or July. How many of you would?
Hi, I can hear somebody in the background talking. If you would just press *6. Just press *6, and if you'd like to come on the call, just press *6 again and call out my name, Dave, Dave, Dave. I'll acknowledge you and you can participate. What an interesting experience. What would make us, at this point in time, have a desire to move Christmas if we could just avoid it? And I thought, maybe, just maybe, this is a moment for self-reflection unlike we've experienced in the last decade. We have been able to hide from ourselves and pretend as if we're wealthy, finance it with all of our credit cards and home equity lines, and all of a sudden, many have tapped those things out. There are very few reserves from which to pull, and here we are facing the truth. I am so excited about this moment in time. It is painful for many, but the same thing happened to me at an in December of 1989, that was 20 years ago this month. This is our 20th anniversary. I thought I would take just a moment. I don't like to share this story very often, but in light of where we are right now as a society, we were experiencing in Southern California as a community. It wasn't quite nationwide as it is now. And now it is. A moment of truth. We were living in our dream home. We had a full-time housekeeper and gardener. There was a 40-foot custom bus. You've seen the ones that the actors have. We had one of those out there in the Circle Drive. Ferrari, Corvette, Mercedes. Private tennis coach for our children on our tennis court in the backyard, swimming pool, wonderful life. And all of a sudden in 1986, a tax law passed that started impacting our business. Our business was multiple unit apartment complexes. We specialized in building 100 unit apartment complexes. That's what we did for a living. And we were quite successful. And then the world started to fall apart. And I had an office staff of people that had been with me for years. Many of you are in businesses where you have employees. And Betty sent a letter out to many of you recently talking about the fact that many of you are considering letting people go or cutting back salaries. It's a very difficult thing to do when people have been loyal and worked hard over periods of time and they've got mortgages, they've got car payments. It's a tough decision to make. Except for you reach a point where it's starting to impact you so seriously that you have to start cutting back. You might move an office from an office building to your home. We did that. We let go of our housekeeper, and the maid's quarters became my office. That was the first step. Then we let the gardener go on and said, oh, it's great. Isn't this wonderful? The kids can learn how to mow the lawn. I grew up in a home that was... We weren't poor. I just paid for everything from age 14 on. My dad was an engineer. There wasn't extra funds available. I learned how to work hard. My children's beds were made by a housekeeper every morning. It was really, we wanted to create this amazing life with tremendous opportunity for them, but they were not learning how to work. So Ramona said, oh, good, they'll get to learn how to mow the lawn. When Socorro was gone, good, I'll get my kitchen back. I'll be able to do my own cooking. It was a very interesting time, and it got tighter and tighter and tighter until we could no longer pay. You have a $400,000 motor home with a $170,000 loan on it. You think that's pretty safe. It's a second home. It's deductible. And all of a sudden, you can't sell it, and you have to give it back to Sears, their largest consumer loan at the time. And they sold it for $135,000, and I had a $53,000 deficit to face. The Mercedes went back to the Mercedes dealership. What could be sold was sold. And by the time it all boiled down, our dream home, which I had identified about 10 years or so before we bought it, we said, someday we'll live in that home. We bought it and did live in it for 5 years. Marvelous place on the top of Mount Helix. In San Diego, California. We couldn't support it any longer. And so we sold it. I remember this one event. I write about it. I've recorded it. For those of you who have the six qualities of an intentional creator, you've heard this story. Bear with me if you have. A year before it finally came down to falling apart entirely, I was in bed one night, and I had a dream. And I share this with you so that if anybody is here, you can know that we know what this feels like, and we know the principles for getting out of this dark place. In my dream, I got out of bed. It was so vivid. We had lost everything, and this was long before we did. And I went into my closet to pray, and I got down on my knees, and I began to pray. And all of a sudden, in the pit of my stomach, in the depths of my soul, a pain started to radiate, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew until it consumed my being, and I began to weep, and I fell prostrate on the floor, and I could not get up, and I kept crying out, where is my, thinking of Abraham of old, when he was asked to kill Isaac and then was able to save him, and there was a ram provided in the bushes. Where's my ram? Because I could feel this knife going into my soul, then I could feel it twisting. And I'm thinking, why is this happening to me? And at the height of this pain, I woke up and I leapt out of bed and I was sweating. I woke Ramona up. It's the middle of the night.
Can you turn the light up?
And I sat down on the bed. She said, what's going on? And I shared with her the dream. It was the most horrific thing I could imagine. The pain and torment. Because, you see, money was everything to me. I had worked very, very hard to create a very wonderful lifestyle. We were 35 years old, worth millions of dollars, and independently wealthy. and this was starting to come unraveled at the seams at the time of this dream. Who would have ever imagined it got to the point that it did? About a year later, I'm lying in bed. I can't sleep because it was all gone or was going to be taken away. And I went into the closet to pray. And I knelt down and lived in tangible reality that experience all over again. I have written in my section on six qualities of an intentional creator that it required a heart transplant. I had been approaching success and wealth from a help me build my castle. And I had the castle on the hill. I remember one day standing in the porte cochere by the front door, climbing into someone's Ford automobile and wondering how I was going to let people know that I drove a Mercedes and a Ferrari if they saw me in the back seat of this despicable automobile. I mean, it was really sad. I had a Rolex watch that I wore. I remember being late for a meeting and driving back home because I'd forgotten to put it on my wrist. That was my identification. Can you imagine being in that space? I needed such a heart transplant. It had to be just cut out of me with a dull knife and had to be reinserted, a new heart. And some of us are at that space right now. Some of you are having some challenges in marriages, some in business, not all. If you're having a year, the best year of your life, and financially everything's wonderful for you, then just be with us tonight. But if you're having one of those years where you're just starting to question, even if there's a God in heaven, then I want to walk you through some basic principles for digging out of this pit. Christmas, to me, is a vivid reminder of a rebirth. We were packing our house at Christmas in 1989. Our dream and years of work and millions of dollars evaporated. We packed our truck, two Ryder trucks, and we sold a beautiful bronze eagle, 8-foot wingspan, just lifting off its talons out of the back of the truck to the new owner of the home. A fruit inlaid grandfather clock right out of the back of the truck to the new owner. Total $2,000 for both of them. It's crazy, but I needed the money to pay for the two trucks to get us to a new location. We were literally starting over again. I share that with you because some of you are there right now. The very first thing, it's okay to get angry. It's been my experience that that power that's greater than all of us is never offended, not when we're angry. Some of you have worked very hard to create what you've created, and the loss is quite significant. First step is to take a deep breath and ask yourself, how important were things to me? What has been my focus over the last decade? Am I building this business so 5,000 people can build me a castle? Or am I focused on assisting 5,000 other people to build theirs? Where is my heart? We've got a little conversation going on in the background, and this is such a sacred conversation. If you could press *6... if you've got someone in the background talking, please just out of reverence and deference to everyone who's on the call tonight, please press *6 and mute out that line. We would deeply appreciate it. So here we are, if you're in this space. It is time to discover some basic principles of creating success long term. Principle number one, it is not about you. It never was about you. And the longer we insist on making it about ourselves, the harder it will be to create success, or the harder it will be to sustain it. It will go through our fingers like water. We all will want to have participation in the law of abundance. See, the abundance is not something that we win. It's not something that we receive. It's a sacred process in which we actively participate. And we eventually become. Principle number one, it's not about you. It never was. When we finally learn the greatest secret of success in all ventures, Og tells us that muscle can split a shield and even destroy life. We can be forceful. We can be arrogant. We can be materialistic. I was all of those things. But only the unseen power of love. Now, this isn't warm and fuzzy love. This is agape love, which is a heightened level of awareness. Seeing a person as a human being, feeling what that human being is feeling. Only this kind of love will open the hearts of men. And until I master this art, I am no more than a peddler in the marketplace. I will make this my greatest weapon. And none on whom I call can defend against its force. Oh, what a powerful thought. If I have this heightened level of awareness, and Og goes on to say, my reasoning they may counter, my speech they may distrust, my apparel they may disapprove, my face they may reject, and even my bargains. Some of you represent product lines that you present to friends and through a network marketing or a direct selling company. Even my bargains they may, they cause them suspicion. Yet my love, this awareness, this actual focus on them, acknowledging them as a human being, seeing them as a human being, feeling what they're feeling, yet my love will melt all hearts, not some, all hearts, like unto the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. We are entering a time in history where this is going to be proven as one of the greatest secrets of success in all ventures. We have lived in a decadent, selfish, self-centric decade, and it has nearly cost us a country, an economy. And now we're going to learn the hard way, but oh, it's great to learn it, that this is not about us, that the greatest secret of success is focusing on another human being. That's the very first piece. Now, in our series, The Six Qualities of an Intentional Creator, the very first quality is mastering the art of connection. Because it is the single most important piece. We also discover as we begin to learn how to master connection that we are somewhat reluctant to give up some of that self-centric nature. And some of us will have to experience, as I did, heart transplants through very traumatic events to bring us to a point where we finally acknowledge what is true. That's okay. It would be much better if we did it without having to be compelled. I had to be compelled. I'm the poster child for rebellion against this principle. A loving God, and I hope you don't mind me using that phrase, that power, you can call it whatever you wish, but to me it's God. Love me enough to take me to that edge where my just about cost me my life for me to learn this great principle. So that's the very first one. The next one, this one has been ingrained in us now for the last almost two decades. We call it the ease dis-ease. It's a discovery that what we have been pursuing most of our life does not exist on this planet. There is not a place without stress, without pain, without frustration. There is not a place where we have total time freedom, where we can waste our time and still survive. There's not a place where we can spend whatever we want to, when we want to, and survive. This place does not exist. Yet, our whole system, I'm going to retire and those will be my golden years. I'm going to get rich and then, oh, I would please ask, there's somebody in the background who's got a telephone that is not on mute. Please. If you've got someone in the background, just press star 6. It would just be so courteous. Thank you. We want to get away from that which has been troubling us. Debt, stress, anxiety. It's understandable. We're going through plenty of it. We want to go to a place when we are rich and then live in what it'll be like then. We want a life of ease. The great principle that must be, you'll want to embrace this. There is no such place. There is no such place. Everyone I know who is wealthy, and I'm surrounded by them, there's not a home on this block that's worth less than $2.5 million. Some of them 5 and 6. These are wonderful, successful CEOs, business owners. There is not one of them that lives a life of ease. They have become individuals who can handle enormous amounts of stress with ease. They're not looking for a life of ease. They're able to handle stress with ease. That which would crush most, they handle multiple times in the day because they become capable of doing that. If you are hungry for success, you thirst for happiness and peace of mind, know that there is a process of becoming that you would not want the wealth dropped on you immediately because you most likely would not be able to handle it. You would lose it within 5 years. And your life would be more miserable, and I've had some people actually say, I would be better off if I didn't have it, had not have had it. As much as we think we want it, as much as we think that life would be something glorious, it is not. All of a sudden, if we want it, we'd have every Tom, Dick, and Harry standing in line asking us for part of it, and wondering why we wouldn't give it to them because we didn't have to work for it. Why should they have to work for it? Why would we hold them accountable, a standard different than ourselves? We were just lucky. Unbelievable charlatans, Ponzi schemes, thieves, our own appetite, which cannot be filled by buying things. Now, if you have not had a lot of money in the past, you might actually think that if you had enough, you could buy yourself to happiness. I can tell you right now, you can't buy enough cars, enough watches, enough clothes, enough homes, enough real estate. You can't buy enough to be happy. It is a void that is not filled by buying. But it is a void that can be filled by serving. It is a void that can be filled by stepping into people's worlds and serving them. So, ease does not exist. However, we still pursue it. And then we've been told by some great teachers that if we would just vividly visualize with enough intention, that somehow this magical fairy will anoint us, manifest our dreams in tangible reality. We even believe that if we sat in an easy chair and thought about a Lamborghini with enough intention that it would actually appear in the garage. And we are violating the very basic principles of abundance. Now that's hard for some to swallow. I've had some want to argue. However, most of them are broke, broken and angry. Here's the truth. There is a power greater than us, and it does manifest to us. And it manifests in 7 different ways. I'm going to spend just a moment and tell you how it works. You see, the power through which it manifests 5 ways, we usually have tied up with fantasy. We go into the future of what it's going to be like when and then because of the thought processes unique to this group of people actively seeking abundance. We create expectation, concrete conditions for happiness, norepinephrine coursing through our body. We feel euphoric. It's wonderful. We can even cry. Within 24 hours, life shows up differently. I don't have time to go into the details of dualistic thinking, but because of the way this part of the brain functions, if that is threatened, the body goes into an autonomic, that's more than automatic, autonomic response to protect that expectation. Cortisol fills our body. We feel anxious. Fear dendrites take all the metabolic energy off of our front of our prefrontal cortex and other parts of our brain, centralize them in the amygdala, our fight-or-flight center. Our hippocampus, our memory center shut down. We are rendered emotionally and sometimes physically debilitated. What do? We escape back to fantasy. What it's going to be like when and then, and we have that euphoric experience again, that counterfeit joy. And then we wonder why nothing ever happens. It's a dark void of undulating joy, counterfeit joy, depression, counterfeit joy, depression, counterfeit joy, depression. It wears people out. And just know that that cortisol is one of the greatest causes of diseases among those who are 65 years of age and older. Geriatric physicians, we have one as a coach, Don Kennedy out of Florida. He would tell you that 95% of the illnesses that present in his geriatric patients are caused by the chronic release of cortisol over a lifetime. They have worried, they've tormented themselves over things that never happen. And think about where you are this Christmas with your finances and all the obligations and what you want to do for your children and for nieces and nephews and families and brothers and fathers and you got a mortgage to pay and a car to keep current, and those things are having challenges. All that stuff is going on. That's where our thought processes are. They're all tied up there instead of the five ways and places where this power greater than us can actually manifest something. Great leaders teach visualization, not knowing that 98% of the people who are visualizing are doing it using fantasy. Escape and avoid fantasy. So when they say visualize with more intention, there must be some reason you're not seeing this the way I'm seeing it. That's true. They're not. And if we got leaders on the phone, I want you to know right now tonight, your people do not visualize the way you do. You teach them how to have dream boards. And I'll tell you what happens. The dream board to you is a target, something you're working toward. Oh, you may have gone there and mentally experienced what that's going to be like to get clarity, and you come back and with passion to create that in the actions of the day, in the millimeters of the moment, you're creating what takes to get there. That's not what your people are doing. Your people are seeing visualization as a license to fantasize with even more intention. Norepinephrine, cortisol. Paralyzed, euphoric. They go home from your meetings, and it's $10,000 in the first block or two. It's up to $20,000, and pretty soon they start imagining what they could buy with that $20,000, and at $20,000 isn't that much. It seemed like it till we needed to redecorate the whole living room. Gosh, it took the whole month's income. We can't do that. We need $30,000. Pretty soon it's $40,000. By the time they pull in the garage, they're up to $100,000. They go in, they're still in their mind fantasizing, say goodnight to everybody. They're lying in their beds thinking about how glorious this is going to be when they got $1 million a month coming in from this business. Oh, this is going to be so wonderful. And the next morning they wake up, and life shows up. And they go into that amygdala hijack, and it torments them. That power that governs abundance cannot manifest anything in that environment. Nothing. Now, you're great leaders on the phone. I'm going to share with you what you do, and you're going to say, yeah, that's what I do. Uh-huh. And it's time we start teaching our people how to do this. Clearly, knowing now that 98% of them are using this great gift of obsessive thought and vivid visualization to destroy themselves. I can almost hear somebody saying, I've got my left hand out like it's a hatchet, like a tomahawk, chopping wood. Not going there today. Not going there today. I'm going to stay in mental creation, constructive mental creation. Five things that great leaders naturally do. One, they've got a presentation tomorrow. And tonight, instead of about dreaming about the Ferraris they're going to buy from the money that comes from the meeting, they're focused on the meeting. They're playing it out in detail. and they realize there's something missing over here that they need to get taken care of first thing in the morning, or there's something they need to get prepared, or something they're going to want to say in a different way. I was on a national call this morning for a company, and the lady who introduced me was preparing for the 10-minute introduction she was going to be able to give this morning into the evening, and went to sleep and had a dream in the middle of the night. In the dream, she learned what she was supposed to say. Not for a moment did she think about the 1,500 people on the line, what it was going to do to her organization, all the money she was going to make. She focused solely on creating the most powerful 10 minutes she could, and it was incredible. Incredible. That's what great leaders do. Great leaders think about the next meeting. They're sitting here staring at leads, and they're seeing people. They're seeing lives. They're seeing challenges and struggles. They call someone. They're not focused on the fear or what they're going to say. They're focused on, what does this person need? They're visualizing in their mind how they're going to bless the lives of another person. That's one thing. Now, there are some leaders that just absolutely are all about the money. They don't last very long. I've seen them come and go, been around a long time. But the ones who stay, the ones who are leaders in any business, long term, are focused on the people. Second, this particular individual that introduced me this morning, we were talking Saturday, and I shared a concept with her. I said, we seek inspiration. If there's anyone I can serve, based on my unique experiences, put them on my path, and I will serve them. She says, oh, that's what I do. I said, tell me about it, Peggy. And Peggy told me all about it. She says, every morning I get up and said, whose life can I bless today? And people come into my life that I can bless. She happens to be the top level of her company and makes a great income and never thinks about money. She's always thinking about the next life she can bless. How cool is that? Third thing. We explore. What could that ad say? How could I design that? Explore without making is called creating without making tangible commitments, like having an etch-a-sketch and you draw it. Well, that didn't work. Draw another one. That didn't work. The mind for almost everyone on this phone is so vivid and so obsessive that you could design a bathroom in your mind before you ever pick up a hammer. You could think about creating an organization or how you would structure things before you make the first phone call. That's a great gift. Just be very careful not to use it to explore things you cannot yet afford to buy, other than to get clear on the actions you'll take today to create the money to buy it. Fourth, problem solving. This part of our mind is obsessive. It won't stop till there's a solution. How many of you sat up in bed the middle of the night and go, oh, that's it, boom. And lastly, goal setting. Now just pause for a moment before I go into goal setting. How many of us are driving along the road of life in our thoughts? Just imagine a level road, and all of a sudden the road starts to tip to the left. It wants it to fall down into this dark void over here on the left-hand side, the pit of despair. And all of a sudden we hit an icy spot. Down we go. And we're spending time down in this fantasy, catastrophe, counterfeit pleasure, worrying, fear, tormenting ourselves. And for every hour we spend here, we waste a day. Every hour we waste a day. Because of the chemicals that are released in our body through those thought processes, it takes a day for them to bleed off of our system. Laughter can help. Prayer can help. Exercise can help. Sometimes just time will help bring back some stability. We don't want to waste the day. Imagine spending your day, not over there at all, seeking inspiration. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. You get inspiration, you call. And you find out that person, you haven't talked to them for a year. They need exactly what you have. Oh, what a great thing. You're being guided because that power is manifesting to you a name. You're in mental rehearsal, and it's manifesting to you an impression. A client said to me in a coaching session the other day, I had this impression to send a voicemail to a client that just said, doing little things, great things come out of doing little things consistently. I felt really stupid when I did it. Not stupid, she didn't say that, but I failed. You know, that was kind of ridiculous. But I did it because I was impressed to do it. Client called her 3 days later and placed a nice order with her. Oh, what a wonderful thing. When we follow these impressions that are manifest to us, they cannot be manifest by this power greater than us if we're over here in this void. It cannot happen. You can sit in an easy chair, and you can have this power manifest to you. Not a Lamborghini, but an idea of how to create one. A person you might be able to talk to and serve. A way to present differently than you ever have before. That's what it'll manifest. And when you get into goals and expectations, you're able to go into the future to get clarity about what it is you want to create with your life, in your relationships, with your finances, your business, spiritually. And then work your way back. What could I do in the next year to create that? The next quarter to create that? The next month to create that? The next week to create that? The next day to create that? And here I am sitting in today, and I made this decision. Just write this down if you would. Right hand, success. Left hand, mediocrity. Right hand, success. Left hand, mediocrity. Which one do I want to pick? We make this decision every day. I pick success. Okay. That's when your free will stops. You get to make the choice. But once you choose success, you don't get to choose what you do. You don't get to choose. Success requires hard things. And today may be one of the really hard ones. But it's required. If you want success, it's required that that be done and be done well. So what could I create? How could I create that? How could I serve? How could I make this interesting and fun? How could I bless a life with this? Keeping your eyes on that goal above your head, as Og says. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to make phone calls today. I hate phone calls, but I'm going to make phone calls anyway. I'm going to go out and see people. I'm nervous around people. I'm going to go care about people. I'm going to step into their world. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do that hard thing. And if I'm using my mind constructively, that great power is manifesting an inspired idea, impression, or a solution to a problem. And here's the secret to the manifestation. Is everybody ready? When it comes, if you are wired to a functional MRI, parts of your brain would light up that you normally don't use. It ignites your passion. Passion drives focus, discipline, effort, and action. If you are in the pit of despair, and you are not using your mind constructively, you are not getting inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems, which means your passion is not being ignited. Whatever you decide to do, you do, and it's hard to do, but it's also boring and mundane and repetitious, and you won't do it very long. However, if you are seeking a manifestation of an inspired idea, impression, solution to problem. Jack Canfield in The Secret. I was in the shower and got a $1 million idea. Well, he didn't wait for that to just happen. It ignited his passion to take the action necessary to bring it to fruition. That's the gift that this power gives us. Manifests ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems. By mentally rehearsing events and getting impressions, by seeking inspiration, by exploring, by problem solving, and lastly, by goal setting. And goal setting gives us now purpose in everything we do. I know why I'm doing this millimeter of creation, because it's the next step in bringing me closer to that dream. I've seen it. I know it's possible. It ignites my passion. It lights my fire. I can't wait. I'm somewhat impatient, so I'm going to work tirelessly to do the work necessary of creation. Those are the first five ways we can use our mind to have that great power actually manifest something to us. Oh, does it manifest? Absolutely. But in our mind, it does not manifest tangible reality. That is a lie. It's a falsehood. And anybody that teaches it to you is selling a book. Period. It does not work. What does work is when you've had one of those ideas, or or impressions or a solution to a problem that ignites your passion. And now the third principle. Remember, one, it's not about you, it's about people. Two, we let go of that desire for ease, which drives our fantasy, and we use our mind constructively. And as a result, ideas are manifest to us, ignites our passion. Next principle is we come into the here and now. Ignited, our passion ignited, ready to take action. And that great power does two things here that are just as miraculous as they can be. But they only happen when we are in passion-driven action. Not in passion-driven fantasy. Not sitting in our easy chair, but actually in action. When we choose to be in action, there are two more things that that power will manifest, and I've watched them. I experienced it this weekend. First thing is, people will be put on your path who you can serve. Miraculously. I have a client practicing this today, called a major client. She hadn't talked to for a few weeks. They've been putting her off. She wasn't going to call them because she just didn't want to hear it's Christmas time, we're busy. But she had a strong impression it was time. She called, and the first words out of the gentleman's mouth was, "I was just thinking about you. My budget's $120,000. I'm ready. Or will be." Oh, that power, greater than all of us, when we're in passion-driven action based on inspired, manifested idea, impression, or solution to a problem, we'll put people on our path who we can serve and who will serve us. I have wanted to connect with a person so badly for the last year. Saturday, something miraculous happened through another source. Spent a week stepping into people's worlds, serving people, done all that I could do, and was handed a gift on Saturday because I was in action. Miraculously, miraculously put on my path to serve me. Oh my goodness, it's so humbling to experience. It's just part of the process when you're in the sacred process called abundance. That's the first thing it will do. In our conversation this morning with my coaching client, I said, don't be surprised anymore. She was surprised what this person said. Don't be. Do all that you can do to be in the service of others. All that you can do to avoid the desire for ease. All that you can do to use your mind constructively in service of others. All you can do to be present in the now. And don't be surprised when people are put on your path that you can serve. Now, people talk about that as the law of abundance. Yeah, it is. Now you know how to get there. And when you show up whole and complete, real and genuine and authentic, you're attractive. You're attractive. People are attracted to you. They want what you have. They want the peace of mind they see in your eyes. They want the peace that you have. That's what they want more than the money. That's the first thing. The second thing that power manifests, it will endow you with more ability than you currently have. You're in action, fully using what you've already been given. This is a true principle. I've felt it in my life. I've watched it in many others. Anybody on this phone who's building a business, if you will do all that you can do, stop burying your gifts with fear, do all that you can do, you will receive additional gifts. You just will. You'll be endowed with even greater power. You will be surprised, delighted, and deeply grateful. That's how it works. I watched this for the 10 years that we dug out. I shared this by starting in 1989, moving up here to Utah, $1 million in debt, and beginning to intentionally create a new career. I decided to become a writer. I've written and directed some films already. I decided to really do it as a living where people would pay me, not just as an avocation to do films on important topics, something that someone would actually pay me for. It took 2 years. 2 years of writing 8 to 10 hours a day, studying Truby story structure, wrote 4 film scripts, The writing partner who started with me had rewritten his Academy Award speech 4 times. I kid you not, this is not funny. That's what he had done. He had not written his scripts. He'd written his Academy Award speech. Can you believe this? I wrote 4 feature film scripts. The month I finished the 4th one, someone called me and watched the film I had produced 5 years earlier and said, could you come to our studio? We'd like your creative input on this project we're working on. And that began a round of 200 commercials and dramatic television series that were produced between 1992 and the year 2000. The last feature film script I wrote was for Og Mandino's book, The Christ Commission, a $75,000 commission to write it. And when I took that down to Betty, October 9th, it was her birthday. I did not know that until I was there at dinner with her. We developed a fast friendship. And 2 years later, in January of 2000, I'm standing in the cancellation line of The Lion King in New York. They're filming some commercials for CNBC. I was there with the film crew. We finished early. We're standing in sub-zero weather, freezing to death. You know, Y2K hadn't happened, so the world was still there. We were hoping to get in to see The Lion King. Tickets were sold out a year in advance. And I get a phone call from Betty Mandino, and she says, Dave, the rights to the greatest salesman in the world are not going to be renewed. Michael Landon is not going to take them. Would you be interested? That went from the greatest salesman to Og Mandino's name on use on the internet, training, speaking, his material. Given that fiduciary responsibility, I call it the rhetorical question of the century. By the time we got into Lion King and we all got in, we had put the framework together of the contract with the publisher in Florida, her attorney in New York, and mine in California. And we had the framework. It took us a few more weeks to put the whole thing together. And then we began the process of building the Og Mandino Group. Debts had been paid. August of 2000, I wrote out the last $14,000 check and that $1 million of debt and paid it off. I hit my knees that night, a deeply grateful man, something I never thought would ever happen. $1 million. And I said, thank you, God. And I had this warm feeling come over me, and he said, what did you learn? I thought, what an odd question. But I knew the answer. And here's the answer. You open up the doors of opportunity, I do the work. Lesson learned. That's all I felt. Lesson learned. Heart transplant complete. Within 8 months, I'm now the CEO of the Og Mandino Group. Can you imagine taking his principles to the world? And now we've got intentional creation and a website, and you can take the assessment online and hear what your thought processes are trying to make you do. Years in development. The 6 qualities of an intentional creator. The 387-page manuscript for the book was just handed off to my agent and to my collaborator, John David Mann, to finish up the book so it can be meet our deadline for March 15th for New York. Can you imagine being in a position where those things start to happen and every single one of them intentionally created using the principles I've just shared with you? First of all, it is not about me. You build your business making it about other people, and you'll be blessed. You say, not going there today. Don't waste an hour. You'll waste a day in that pit. Spend your time focused on the 5 constructive ways to use your mind, and you will receive manifestations. That power will manifest. We hear that all the time in the Law of Abundance, but it will manifest ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems. Ignite your passion, come into the now, and begin the work of creation. You've chosen success. You don't get to choose what you do from that point on. It requires the hard thing. That's why passion's essential. You wouldn't be able to do some of those hard things without the passion. Not on a sustained level. So the passion drives the building. You start to build a business. You become a professional in your field, whatever it is. you become the very finest, the very best in your field. And as you're doing so, people will be put on your path that you can serve, who will serve you. And you'll be endowed with even greater levels of ability. Now, there are other issues that we address in the six qualities, such as order and structure, because 99.5% of those who are in direct sales and network marketing, for an example, resist structure. They want to fire their boss. They want to have time freedom, financial freedom, and they find themselves when they quit their job in their bunny slippers at 2 in the afternoon wondering why they're not building anything, because the very structure required to build the business is the very thing they were trying to get away from. Oh, there's a great section on that in the six qualities. Then, finding joy in the process, because we're all looking at that destination, when I'll be rich and then. But we live in the millimeters of life, between now and then. That's where all the fun's going to occur. That's where all the joy's going to occur. That's where there's going to be pain and sorrow and joy, yes. But let's find out how to enjoy this journey. And lastly, self-esteem. Some of us have been hammered. Traumatic events that have occurred in our life that have destroyed the underpinnings of trust. Some, there's just inconsistency between what we present to the world and what we really are doing secretly in our lives. And some of us are just struggling with unmet expectations, the single greatest cause of self-esteem challenges. We have an expectation that we've created in fantasy and life shows up differently. We hate life and we beat ourselves up. Something's wrong with me. It seems to work for everybody else. I must be a loser. Maybe God doesn't even love me. And we tear ourselves up. It's important that you spend some time on this piece and rebuild your self-esteem from a ground level up so that you can be whole and complete, real and genuine and authentic without the need to impress or pretend or feel shame or fear. Oh, to walk among the children of men and be comfortable in your own skin. A blessing we would wish on all. We have just a few minutes left. I wanted to give you an overview. It's that time of the season. It's that remembrance of packing up that house 20 years ago. This is going to be a great celebration this Christmas for our family, for what has happened. The first 10 years, paying back $1 million in debt. The last 10, building a marvelous estate and a great life, and having a sustained, loving relationship through that process. May we all take the principles I've shared with you tonight, apply them with courage. Stop trying to escape. Embrace principles. Engage in life. Connect with people. Create value in all you do. Contribute to the world. Choose to be alive. Stop trying to hide from it, get away from it, to buy that tropical island so we can tell the world to go to hell because we're sick and tired of people. It's time to become alive, a citizen of this great place called planet Earth. May this Christmas season bring to all of you and to those guests who are with us tonight the renewal to make 2010 the best year of your life. And to use these principles I've shared with you tonight, let go of fantasy. Use your mind constructively. Let that power manifest those impressions and ideas and solutions to problems. Come into the here and now, passion-driven, and let it manifest people on your path and manifest more ability than you have if you're fully using what you've got. May you do that. We have about 6 minutes. I'm going to open this up. If anybody's got a question or a comment, the floor is yours. If you're on mute, if you're calling out my name and I'm not recognizing you, it's because you're probably on mute. Is there anyone that would like to ask a question or make a comment about our discussion this evening?
Hey, this is Lynette. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Lynette, and welcome. And welcome all your guests who are with you tonight.
Thank you. I think we have quite a few people on this call, so I'm very excited about that. I just wanted to tell you thank you. As we embark on a new year, these principles are so true to what we need to do, and it's really good to have a reminder as we step into building our businesses and turning our lives into what we choose. I love what you say about turn right or turn left,
and turning right so we engage in life and take those steps and take the action. So thank you for that wonderful reminder and so well put.
And thank you for being an example of these principles, Lynette. Any other questions or comments tonight? So let me close with this thought, lest anyone misunderstand. Some are in very traumatic and painful times. I don't want to minimize your pain. But if you want to get past it, you'll have to make that decision. God will succor you, but he won't rescue you. It's time for us all to pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps and begin the process. And when we do, we'll discover we are not alone. It is not easy and it is not fast, but the fastest way to abundance is using the principles I've just described. Some will spend a lifetime trying to find a shortcut and an easy way and waste an entire life in the pursuit. The wise man, the wise woman, begins to apply these principles of success. And in relatively short time, the evidences start to show up of the truthfulness of these principles, where they start to feel joy. And when you start to feel the joy, you start to do them with more intention. And the more intention you do, the more success you will experience. And that great power, because there is one, there really is abundance, the law of abundance really is there. And so long as we're focused on blessing the lives of another person, that power will partner with you in doing so. And I'll tell you, there's nothing greater than having that great power as a partner to speed up your process. It's the only way to speed it up. The rest of it is just going to be beating your head against brick walls. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
Dave?
Yes?
May I ask you just very briefly, what was your family's experience once you were going through this process of paying back the debt? I mean, did they join your camp? Were you working together as a team to embrace this experience of this, you know, that you went through?
I must tell you that when we were pulling away from our dream home, my wife was driving our Ford van. It's a 12-passenger Ford van. We had 7 children, 13 and younger. And there she was, leading them in camp songs. Now, I'm bawling.
Oh, gosh.
I'm leaving my dream home, dream cars, dream bus, dream everything, and they're singing songs. I've asked her since, and I must give her all the credit for this. And some of you are not blessed with this kind of a companion, and it takes even more courage, even Herculean courage, to do it without that support. I asked her years later, I said, sweetheart, you never complained once. When we came to Utah, and we were looking for a home, and we were on the edge. We had to buy a home subject to because we couldn't finance a new home. She took a 3.01 carat investment-grade diamond off of her finger, handed it to me, and said, sell this for the down payment. I said, sweetheart, I can't do that. She says, no, I don't need it anymore. I was really blessed. She said, I asked her, how could you do that? She said, I just had such faith in you that you'd do this, you'd pull this out. If you're in this situation and you're the spouse of someone in this situation, I would just plead with you not to be nagging and critical, but to be supportive and intrinsic validating. Find the good, support. Nothing ever good comes out of the negative. Now, that's a double negative to even say it that way. I can be guilty of it. On my bad days, sometimes I beat up my office staff, bless their hearts. We all do. We all have those days. But if we can, in the relationships with our children or committed companions, significant others, whatever it might be, to be supportive, because that was the secret to what happened. Now, my children were young, and they were spoiled rotten. It was tough for them. It was really tough for them. But I remember we were apart for almost 2 weeks. They were parceled out to family members while we were finding this home, and we finally moved in. And I still remember the first night. We were all gathered together, and we just spontaneously had a prayer together as a family. I'll never forget where we were standing. We're actually kneeling in a circle, the family, all back together, so grateful to be together in one place, in a warm place. It was snowing outside. It was January by this point. of 1990. And then we just began the work. Just the work. I can tell you what it was like. It was literally between 10 and 16 hours a day, 6 days a week for 10 years. That was the work. That's the price I had to pay for my heart transplant. And I'll close with this thought. I remember one night saying to God, if you will show me the principles and I get out of this, I will spend the rest of my life teaching them so that other people don't have to spend 10 years to dig out. We are still rebellious. We still resist these things. If you feel passionate in my voice about embracing what I've shared with you, I am telling you these are the true principles to create success. Fight them and your battle will be hard and long. Surrender to them and it will be quick. You'll begin to experience success. So that's our mission. That's what drives the Augmandino Group, is a passion among everyone in the office. We all have our own stories to change people's lives. Our mission is to heal torn bodies and torn minds. We're so glad you're with us tonight. Any other comments,
Dave,
or questions? Yes.
Dave, one of the things that I was thinking about while you were chatting, and this is consistent with scroll number two, and it speaks to the agape love, and it's really, you know, when you look at someone, look them in the eye or look at them, and before you make any comment, before you interact with them in any way, you say to yourself, I love them, I love you. And by doing that, it just puts you in an entire different frame of mind that you're now much more willing to serve than have them serve you. Over the last several weeks, I've really learned that, and it has made a difference, at least in my output.
Did you discover what you were doing before you started this process?
Well, as you said it earlier, it's not about you. It was about me.
When you saw them, if you didn't say silently and to yourself, I love you, what were you thinking about them? Were you ever
judgmental? How were they going to serve me?
How are they going to serve you? Yeah, too tall,
right.
Too fat, too skinny. Are they going to give me? Or am I going to get what I need? Yeah. Oh, yeah. What a difference.
Right.
Congratulations. Now, how long have you been studying Scroll 2?
Well, Dave, this is Mike Johnson. We had started about a month ago-ish, approximately.
Awesome.
A month and a week or so. Just something that the more you put into practice, the more it steamrolls and builds. And one of the other things that you pointed out earlier, you said, and although this is somewhat, you can't necessarily quantitate it, but as you start doing those things, then more things wind up on your plate or more things happen or more good things, and it just kind of steamrolls, which is really the divine guidance, and that is our Lord giving us more responsibility. But it's made a difference.
Way to be. It's a great lesson to learn that there is a power greater than all of us, and its singular focus is blessing the lives of people. And when we do what was just spoken, silently to ourselves say, I love you, when we actually notice someone, when we actually are there to serve them, we are doing the same thing that power has as a mission. We have now partnered. Can you get some help when you partner with that power, doing its primary and sole mission? Can you imagine? Oh, do you think people will be put on your path that can serve you and you can serve? Well, we could spend all night talking about sacred, sacred, sacred moments when those things happen. Oh, and as those continue, your business flourishes, your life flourishes, your relationships flourish. Thank you so much for that comment. A great place to start, and I was smiling. I wasn't going to say it, but I am. First time I studied the scroll, and I talk about this in Unveiling the Secrets, I remember reading that over and over and over and going, oh, come on, guys, don't do that. Come on. And then I remember the day I tried it for the first time, and I had an absolute awakening. Oh, my goodness, am I judgmental. Oh, no wonder these relationships haven't been working. Simple concept. No one knew about mirror neurons back in 1968. They hadn't even discovered yet. Yet he describes in that one paragraph exactly what a mirror neuron picks up in a person. Let me read them to you since we're here together. We'll close with this thought. Though spoken in silence, these words will shine in my eyes, unwrinkle my brow, bring a smile to my lips, and echo in my voice. In other words, his mirror neurons will pick this up, send signal to his body that I'm safe. He'll be attracted to my conversation, and his heart will be opened. Poetic, 1968, talk about inspired words. And who is there who will say nay to my goods when his heart feels my love, feels the chemicals that are released when a mirror neuron feels safe actually help someone feel your love. They're attracted to you. You're a safe place. Oh, brilliant words. Thank you for mentioning those. Such a richness in the scrolls. Well, everybody have a great evening. We're looking forward to next Tuesday night. And we'll take on our next topic as you're taking on your lives. And may you have the courage. Read these scrolls. Live these principles. And watch success start to develop in your life. Well, thanks, everybody. Good night, and God bless.